Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster. We're a couple of days late this week. We haven't kept Lombardi time, but it's not the fault of my guest and my partner, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, thank you for being so patient. Time differences, they confused us this week. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing really well and looking forward to this. Twitter's been beaten off the hook or whatever you say about Twitter. A lot of people have been anxious to have this podcast, so I think it's going to be a good one.
I think there was one gentleman who referred to himself as like Ewan McGregor in Trainspotting. I think he was going cold turkey without his fix of Inside the Huddle. So we are going to look ahead to week 9 in the NFL. We've got lots of good questions in the mailbag this week, so we will get to them. But we will take a quick look back at week 8 in the NFL. And of course, another big weekend for the NFL with the game between the Atlanta Falcons and Detroit Lions at Wembley Stadium. And Jeff, this was big for a number of reasons. First of all, it was a great game. To me, it was everything that's fantastic about the NFL. The Falcons jump out to the big lead. You think the Lions are dead and buried. The Lions come back and win it, bearing in mind they've struggled. They're on their third kicker of the year, and they win it on a twice-taken field goal. So it had all of that, but then it also was a historic game as well because it started at 9:30 on the East Coast of America.
You know what? And I think the reception to that early start was actually good. Those of us in football here, you know, we're obviously tuned in and glued in, but I think the general fans enjoyed the fact that football for that day began at 9:30 and ended much past 11 that evening, just with a solid day of NFL. And as you said, what another great show by all the fans in the UK, NFL UK, and everybody that puts on the game. It was really, I think, well received, and it was a really showcase game because it was on at 9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, and when we look at the game, Jeff, the Falcons, I mean, the Lions fought back very well. I think they're a different team. Maybe we've talked about their improved discipline and their mental toughness under Jim Caldwell, but I think the Falcons helped them back in it. I just felt, I know you talk a lot about momentum, and I got to broadcast the game for Sky Sports again from the sidelines, and I tell you what, you could almost feel it in the stadium, the momentum slipping away. It felt to me like the Falcons played scared in the second half and scared not to lose it, at least. And Detroit fought back, but I just made a little note here. The Falcons, they allowed a 59-yard touchdown pass on 3rd and 25. Matt Ryan had a horrible interception thrown back across the field. They're trying to run out the clock with their four-minute offense at the end, and they get a holding penalty which stops the clock. And then on third down, Julio Jones drops a pass. Well, there's another 35 seconds for the Detroit Lions. So, you know, the Falcons played their part as well in throwing this one away.
Yeah, you know what? As you watch them, you see all of the things that you talked about. And those are the things that, you know, teams that win those types of games don't do. You can't allow explosive plays on 3rd and 20, especially a 59-yard touchdown. That's almost inexcusable, almost hard to understand, really. And then holding calls when you're trying to, you know, let the clock run. But all of those things are the little small detail things, the edges that good teams always have, and the, you know, mistakes that it seems teams that lose seem to make at the most critical times. So winning and losing are habits, and as you said, the momentum of a game and the momentum of a season can swing on a few plays. And, you know, I feel sorry for Mike Smith because obviously he's under a tremendous amount of pressure now. And, you know, that is a better football team than is performing right now.
Matt Prater missed a 43-yard field goal to what we thought end the game. But there was a delay of game penalty against the Lions, so they get another shot from 48 yards. A few people on Twitter, Jeff, have been asking why this play couldn't be declined by the Lions, because the play didn't exist, because it was, you know, Prater, I guess, could argue, well, I heard the whistle and that put me off. So that play just simply didn't exist, did it, that 43-yard field goal, which is why he got to kick again from 48.
Right. You only have the ability to decline a penalty that actually occurs during a play. Mm. And since there was no play, it was a time count violation. Then there was no choice for Atlanta to decline the penalty and take the win. But again, it's what you just touched on. It seems like when you're going through a stretch like the Falcons are going through right now, that every single thing seems to conspire against you, and that's what makes getting out of that losing cycle such a tough thing. And you see it with other teams around the National Football League. I see it with the Jets. I see it with some of the other teams, that the Bucs right now, that are struggling so much. It's not that they don't have enough talent, because some of those teams are a little talent deficient, but certainly there's enough parity in the NFL that they should have a chance every Sunday. But some way, somehow, they seem to shoot themselves in the foot every week.
It's the year of the comeback, isn't it, Jeff, around the NFL?
Well, if you mentioned the four-minute offense thing, and I'm not sure at this point in the way the game is played today, that four-minute offense is as valid as it used to be. I think it almost comes down to three-minute offense, and you've got to keep your foot on the accelerator as an offense, well past what you used to. You know, it used to be that when you got to 4 minutes, that was the time that you would begin to ice the game and slow the game down and run the ball. But the way teams can score now, it's tougher to do that, and I think maybe the Falcons learned that, as you said, in the second half, where they may have taken the foot off the accelerator a little bit on first down, and it came back to bite them.
What else caught your eye in Week 8, Jeff? Because I was so focused on the Wembley game, I did get back in time to watch quite a bit of Arizona beat Philadelphia 24-20. I got to watch quite a bit of Pittsburgh beat Indianapolis 51-34. I saw the entire New England-Chicago game. I watched that one back via NFL Game Pass. I mean, there were some incredible displays from the quarterbacks around the NFL this week. 400-yard passes in Week 8.
Yeah, and you look at whether it's just the sheer numbers, like the raw numbers that Roethlisberger put up in Pittsburgh, over 500 yards of passing, or almost the surgical approach that Brady used against the Bears. He's 30 for 35. He threw as many touchdowns as he threw incompletions.
A couple of those were drops as well, Jeff. A couple of those were drops.
It was just an amazing performance. And, I was really impressed by the Saints. I thought their offense started to look like Ingram had a big night, and I thought he gave them a lift. And, you can see Cooks is a really special player. I think that was a good step for the Saints, who have really struggled and, been all over the map a little bit on offense. So that was impressive to me. And certainly I think what Bruce Arians is doing out in Arizona is an unbelievably good job of coaching. Three different starting quarterbacks, and now you've got six, you got six wins under your belt. That's really a credit to him and his staff and their coaches.
Yeah, they've played seven games, the Arizona Cardinals. Just five turnovers, Jeff. They're the second fewest in the NFL. We get to see them on Sky Sports on Sunday against the Dallas Cowboys. Should be a good one. But they're showing that, because we talked about the yards in the NFL, the big Star Wars-like numbers you can put up in terms of yards. So those little things like turnovers and red zone stats and how you finish drives, they're not little, are they? They're absolutely massive.
No, and the thing that's becoming... And we've said this has been our position, I think, when we've discussed it during the broadcast. Time of possession is less important now than it's ever been, because people can score so fast and there's so many big plays. So when you look at the game today, it really comes down to certain factors, what we call critical factors. Those are, first of all, turnovers, right? Turnovers will kill you. If you don't get them, and if you give them, they will kill you. Your ability to make explosive plays, and I think, what we call chunk plays, 15-yard runs, 30-yard passes, to gain field position quickly. And then, you always look at what you're able to do with turning the field on special teams, whether that's to punt the ball, punt an opponent deep, have a great return to get the ball on a short field. All of those what we call hidden yardage plays are always going to be big in the NFL. So that's what the game really comes down to. And actually, penalties now more and more because of how strictly they're enforcing the 5-yard no chuck zone.
Yeah, they are. I mean, you look at penalties across the board are up, and I think 5 out of the 6 penalties that are up all relate to defensive backs. Must be a struggle to coach those secondaries right now.
Well, you think about it now, what it's like as an NFL defensive coordinator. I mean, you look at Dick LeBeau in Pittsburgh. I mean, how many times have you ever seen the Steelers get in a shootout game, right? Normally, the Steelers are going to win their games 21-17, 17-10, 10-3, those types of games. But that was a track meet. That wasn't a football game. Both those quarterbacks lit it up.
Yeah, every time Roethlisberger scored a couple of touchdowns, Andrew Luck came back with one himself. I mean, just couldn't quite match Big Ben. Another game to look at, Jeff, Washington 20, Dallas 17 in overtime. So that's snapping that winning streak that the Dallas Cowboys had going on. This was an interesting game, though, because Tony Romo came out of the game with a back bruise. Don't forget, he had 2 back operations in the offseason. And then Jerry Jones appears on the sidelines, and it's Jerry Jones who instructs Jason Garrett that Tony Romo is ready to go back in the game. With all those assistant coaches on the sidelines, with all those team doctors, is that normal that the owner of the team is the one giving medical updates?
No, that's not the normal procedure. But as I watched the game, I saw when Tony got hurt, immediately Jerry left the box. And when Romo was brought into the locker room, I'm sure one of the, you know, he was probably like an expectant father in the waiting room while his wife was going to give birth to the first child. I mean, you could see on his face the anguish in his face when he saw Romo go down. So that is an unusual situation, but that's not the only unusual situation with Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. And, you know, the Cowboys just, here's I laugh because we have a pool that one of our receivers runs. Every week you pick an NFL team, and you know, it was down to 8 people left making the picks. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll take the Browns over the Raiders. And then I look at the Cowboy-Washington game. I said, Cowboys are 6-1. They're at home. Redskins are struggling. Colt McCoy is the quarterback. They can't screw this. And what do? Screw it up. So, you know, it's just, that's typical. It was just like typical Cowboys. They played so well in so many facets of the game, but in a critical moment, the Redskins run a blitz, and they turn a guy free right down the middle, and what happens? Romo gets hurt, and then, you know, Whedon is just not good enough, in my opinion, to win with, and you know, that was what ended up getting him.
Yeah, Jeff, I know I'm not very good at fantasy football, but those survivor pools are the hardest to do, aren't they? Because any given Sunday, anyone can get knocked off in the NFL.
Well, the thing is, you can't use the Super Bowl teams. And the one we do, you can't use the Super Bowl teams, and you can't use a team more than once.
Right.
And so it gets tough. And I was looking at the Browns, and I'm thinking, well, I can use the Browns later. I'll take this Cowboys shirt thing and get to the next week. And lo and behold, it's that old thing about go with your first, with your first belief and what your gut tells you, because the Cowboys broke my heart on Sunday.
There you go. It looks like a couple of teams are moving on from quarterbacks. So the Jets lost 23-43 to Buffalo. Michael Vick is going to get the start this week. So is that the end of Geno Smith? And Zach Mettenberger went in for the Tennessee Titans. I think the Titans have seen what they've got with Jake Locker, which is flashes of talent but an injury-prone player. So do you think those two teams are moving on permanently from those passes?
Well, I think that may be the case, and I think you may be seeing it here in Buffalo too with E.J. Manuel and Kyle Orton. You know, yeah. I just think that Orton gives them a much better chance to win. You look at how that offense has picked up since he's, you know, taking the controls of it. Sammy Watkins is now starting to be the player that they drafted. You know, they moved up to draft in the first round. So I think there is, you know, it's a tough business. And for a quarterback, you're going to always have the greatest amount of scrutiny. But, you know, you look at those guys and their inaccuracy, their inability to be consistent, their inability to make the throws that you need to make at the critical times, the decisions that need to be made. And as you said, in Jake Locker's case, he's a tremendously talented athlete that can't stay healthy. And, you know, it opened the door for the young Mettenberger kid. And, you know, they've seen enough of him, I think, to warrant, let's go that direction and see if he can't be the guy, you know, given these last eight games, and see if he can't be the guy.
I think I know the answer to this question, bearing in mind you used to coach in flip-flops and you're a free spirit, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Zach Mettenberger was asked to have a haircut and a shave. Have you ever asked a player to get his haircut or take it or shave him, shave his beard off?
No, I've never done that. That was really an interesting little interaction that went on between, you know, Mettenberger apparently had his shave and cleaned up a little bit because the Titans said, hey, you're representing the organization, we want you to look good, and which I understand, but. And then J.J. Watt, he either put out a tweet or an Instagram.
He did put out a tweet, yeah.
The day of the game. And again, it incensed J.J. Watt because he thought J.J. Watt thought he was being disrespectful to the game and a little immature. And so I thought to myself, boy, that's all you need is just to make J.J. Watt mad.
As a rookie quarterback in the NFL, and you upset J.J. Watt. That's not a good start.
Yeah, that's not good for your job longevity.
And J.J. Watt as well. Did you see Jeffy? One of his sack celebrations was he took a sort of selfie of himself.
Gave himself a selfie.
Yes, he did. On the sack celebrations, just while we're talking randomly, Lamar Houston of the Chicago Bears. This is the second one we've seen this year. He sacks Tom Brady. I mean, you can argue that he shouldn't even be celebrating. He was trailing by 25 points at the time. But he jumps up. It is an emotional game, I understand that. He jumps up and blows his knee out. And, Jeff, I wanted to ask you because I was never that in shape to worry about stuff like that. The more you're in shape, is it easier to blow out muscles and knees and things? Because how can a man blow his knee out celebrating a sack? And that's the second one this season.
You know what? This is not unheard of. You know, I'll go back to my time in NFL Europe, and we had a linebacker that the Chargers had allocated to us when I was in the Ryan Fire. And I'm sitting up in the booth watching the team be introduced, you know, with the fireworks and all that stuff before the game. And he runs out of the tunnel and jumps up to high five somebody and blows his Achilles tendon. And we actually had one player dislocate his hip putting his pants on.
You
can lose him a lot of ways, but you know, I saw the Houston thing, and you know what, I'm sure it just really, really irked Mark because, you know, you're down 20 points, and you know that was Houston's first sack of the year. And I think he was, you know, excited about the fact he finally had made a play. They went out and got him from Oakland, gave up all that money, and you know, their defenses still continued to struggle. And so he finally got to the quarterback and, you know, leapt up to, you know, do a little sack dance. And then when he came down, he blows his knee up. And that's, I'm telling you, this is a hard, hard game. And that's why you hear coaches all the time say it's hard to win games in pro football because there's just so much that goes into it.
Just on random injuries, do you remember 1995, the World Bowl, Al Luganbill, the head coach of the Amsterdam Admirals, tripped over coming running out the tunnel, dislocated his shoulder, had to coach the whole game in a sling, and they lost.
I do remember that because they were undefeated.
They were.
Going into the World Bowl, and Big Al, he's running out and slips on a piece of wood that was put over a track, then so the player's cleats wouldn't hurt the track, and down he goes and dislocated shoulder, and it was not a good day for Al that day.
No, the Frankfurt Galaxy knocked them off. Jeff, let's get into the games then for week 9 in the NFL. We'll make our picks, and then got some good questions in the mailbag, so I want to get to those this week. We'll start on week 9 on Thursday night, the New Orleans Saints at the Carolina Panthers. Who do you like there?
Well, I think this is really a big, big game in that division because the Panthers have to keep pace with the Saints. Here's what would make me go Saints and why I'm going to choose the Saints. I think the Saints offense showed that they're starting to, you know, get a feel for what each of them can do and how those new roles are being defined and all of that. And you know, Breeze always gives you a chance. They blocked they blocked the run pretty well the other night. Ingram was a plus. But the teams that the Saints have trouble with defensively are typically not the teams that are run first, play action teams. They're teams that can quick strike in and have multiple receiver sets and have playmakers on the outside because they're a little bit nicked up in the secondary. That's not Carolina's MO. Carolina's MO is they want to run the ball first, play defense, you know, more old school NFL. So I think that plays into the hands of New Orleans, which, you know, has a good front and has active safeties and can play eight-man front against you. So I'm going to take the Saints in this one, but I think it's going to be a close football game.
In the regular season, the Saints have won 11 games at home in a row. They've lost 7 in a row on the road. But I'm with you, Jeff. I think that was an impressive performance against Green Bay last week. I think that the Saints, they have to come good and win on the road at some point. Mark Ingram can play a key role in that. So I'm going Saints. Let's move on to Sunday's games then. The Jacksonville Jaguars at the Cincinnati Bengals. Starting to look ahead to the Jags coming to London next week. I watched all of this game against the Miami Dolphins, Jeff. Jacksonville's defense is very good at the moment. Very, very good. Miami couldn't move the ball a lick. They couldn't get anything done. But Blake Bortles handed on a plate to the Dolphins 17 points. So there's a concern there with the Jags.
Yeah, you know, his play from when he's actually declined a little bit. And I think now what's happened to him is defensive coordinators in the league have got film on him, mm-hmm. and they see the things that he struggles with. And what happens in the NFL and certainly in pro football and all of pro football is when there's something that you don't do well or something that causes you a problem, you're going to get it over and over and over again until you show people that you can handle it. And you're right. He started to do the things that he didn't do in preseason and he didn't do in his first couple games, and that's, you know, make mistakes and throw interceptions and turnovers. Again, when you're a team like Jacksonville that's struggling to get over the hump, turnovers are just, they're magnified. The importance of them is magnified. So I think their defense is good enough to hold them in the game. The question will be whether on the road in Cincinnati, which is a tough place to play, they can score enough points to win. So I'm going to take the Bengals.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bengals as well. Looks like AJ Green will be back in that game, which would be huge for Andy Dalton. Dalton, Jeff, 7 games, just 6 touchdown passes on the season.
Yeah, you know, they're finding a different way to win. And, you know, that may be a little bit by scheme in that, you know, they became so dependent on him and his ability to make big plays and throw the ball down the field that when they got to the playoffs, and usually things get a little tighter in the playoffs, he's not performed well. So that may be a thought process from Marvin on the staff about, hey, we need to be able to establish more ways to win a game than relying on Andy Dalton because his playoff history has been, you know, not very good.
Yeah. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the Cleveland Browns. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were the winners of the offseason. Weren't they one of the winners, Jeff, when we were talking around free agency? I mean, they had some big signings. Bucks fans were getting excited around the free agency signing period. Here they are now. They are 1-6. They have the offense that's ranked dead last in the NFL, defense ranked dead last in the NFL. They blew last week's game at home against Minnesota, just 225 yards of total offense for the Buccaneers. So, I've just set it all up nicely. I'm going Cleveland.
Yeah, you know, I think so too. And you know, Cleveland, Pettine has done a really nice job there. And, you know, I think Hoyer is a good enough guy to, I'm not sure he's a good enough guy to take you to the Super Bowl, but I think he's a good enough quarterback to win within the NFL. They play an outstanding defense and finding ways to win games, which is what, you know, teams need to do. And Pettine has done, right now, he's one of my early candidates for coach of the year because, you know, to go into a situation like Cleveland with all the offseason turmoil and the Manziel circus and all that other stuff, and he's kept his team focused and doing the little things it takes to win.
So we're both going Cleveland there. Our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday night is a good one. The Arizona Cardinals, who are 6-1 against the Dallas Cowboys, who are 6-2. Arizona have actually won the last 3 meetings between these teams, Jeff, and as strong as Dallas have been in the first start, there's some doubt now about whether Tony Romo plays. So who do you like in this one?
Well, I think a lot of it's going to come down to if Romo plays or Romo doesn't play. Again, I'm not a big Brandon Whedon fan. I think there's some deficiencies in his game that, you know, become more and more evident the more he has to play. Murray gives him the ability to take the pressure off of the quarterback. But again, if the quarterback can't deliver, then it's much easier to stop the run when you can jam the box with more people. And you know, you got to be able to find a way to get the ball to Dez down the field. Witten and all of the weapons that they have, they've got to find a way to use them. And Whedon's got to make decisions and deliver the ball. And that's not been his forte as a quarterback in the NFL. I like Arizona. I think they're physical. I think Arians has done a great job of keeping that thing, as you say, turnover free as you can be. To win six games with three different starting quarterbacks is an incredible accomplishment in National Football League. So I like Arizona in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take.
But then again, it's the Cowboys.
Right. If I knew 100% that Tony Romo was going to play, then maybe I'd have a different thought. But I'm with you on Brandon Whedon. I mean, the man got lost under a flag in the national anthem, so you have to be concerned. Arizona haven't allowed a single running back to gain more than 85 yards in a game. They're just well coached. They're just well disciplined, aren't they, Jeff?
Yeah, they're a good football team. And, you know, it's really kind of a shame because, you know, they're out there in the desert and in not a big media market. They're playing the West Coast time slot. And so a lot of America and a lot of the world doesn't see them. And this is a great chance for them to showcase their team. And for fans, NFL fans who, you know, are maybe undecided about what team to follow, that you're going to see a really physical football team, a well-disciplined football team, and, you know, a team with Carson Palmer that can, you know, you saw the strike to Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy can make the long throw. So, you know, again, I think they're maybe the most underrated team in the NFL right now.
The Philadelphia Eagles are playing against J.J. Watt and 52 of his friends known as the Houston Texans. How do you see this one playing out, Jeff?
Well, you know what? The Eagles are a little bit of a mystery to me. You know, they haven't, you look at LeSean McCoy and you look at kind of they give up big plays. I'm watching them play bracket coverage the other day and a guy runs right through them for a big touchdown. It just is, there's something not there right now with this team. And not to say that they can't, you know, pick it up or, you know, get the momentum back on their side. But right now the Eagles aren't playing as well as, you know, I think they're capable of. And I think this is a big, big game for them. So, you know, I'm going to go with Chip and the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Eagles. I think they've still got a lot more weapons to be dangerous and more effective than the Texans. They look like they might get Jason Kelce back on the offensive line. But I'm worried about Nick Foles, especially when it comes to playoff time, Jeff, because you only need one ill-timed turnover in the playoffs and you're done. Or you know, if you put up two or three interceptions, I mean, we're seeing him throwing off his back foot. We're seeing him not take care of the football the way he did last year. So, you know, it's certainly a worry, that something that needs to be ironed out in the second half of the season.
Well, you know, you've hit it right on the head, Neil. I think that his play is the biggest difference in how they, you know, were able to win games last year and how they're struggling to win games this year. He didn't turn the ball over. And, you know, it seems like this has been the turnover podcast, but we talk all the time about the critical factors that control winning, and turnovers is number one.
The New York Jets at the Kansas City Chiefs. So Michael Vick played for 3 years under Andy Reid. Now he goes back. His first start is against Andy Reid's Chiefs, and I like the way the Chiefs are shaping up, Jeff, so I'm going to go Kansas City in this one.
Yeah, I like Kansas City because I think they've got a more balanced football team. The Jets are obviously a great team up front on defense. They're struggling in the secondary. Offensively, you know, Harvin has given them another weapon, which they desperately, desperately needed, but I just don't see the consistency in the quarterback play and the ability to, you know, move the ball down the field and stand in the pocket and make throws. I just don't see that. So Kansas City, outstanding special teams, you know, play good enough defense. Smith, I think, is flourishing in that system. Charles is a great running back. They've got weapons. And so, again, I'll take Kansas City.
All right, the San Diego Chargers at the Miami Dolphins. And, Jeff, we all love a bit of NFL history. The Chargers haven't won in Miami since that day they carried Kellen Winslow off the field. 41-38, San Diego won in overtime in the 1981 AFC Divisional Playoff game. Who do you like now?
You know what? I'm going to take Miami. I think they're better on defense. I think Cameron Wake is, you know, one of our followers made mention about Miami's defense. Are they finally starting to get the acclaim that they deserve? And you know, Cameron Wake's a great football player, and we talk about J.J. Watt being the best defensive lineman in the NFL, but Cameron Wake is one of the elite pass rushers in the league, and I think he's going to cause fits for Philip Rivers. And I think Miami in Miami is a tough go when you got to travel all the way across the country to play a game. Statistics tell you that your chances of winning are diminished each time zone you cross, and they've got to cross four time zones to get from San Diego to Miami. So I'm going to go with Miami.
Yeah, three games in a row where Cameron Wake's had a sack. The Chargers are banged up at cornerback. They've lost their last seven in Miami. They've lost their last two games this season. We have gone exactly the same for the first six games, Jeff. And I thought this would be the one that was going to be different because I was going to pick Miami. I thought you'd go Chargers, but you've gone Miami and I'm going Miami as well to win that one. Let's move on to the Washington Redskins at the Minnesota Vikings. And Washington have suddenly quietly won two in a row.
Yeah, and you know what? It was interesting to me kind of the way they did it. Obviously, DeSean Jackson is a huge weapon for them. And Colt McCoy, who I've never been a fan of, really competed hard in that game and managed the game well enough and made enough plays for them to have a chance. They're not without talent. They've got some weapons. And the defense has played a little bit better because it's a little healthier than it was last year. I still don't think they're a playoff team, but it is positive. At least you're seeing signs of life in Washington, and RG3 is, I've heard he's practicing this week and may play this weekend, so that would certainly be a lift for him. So, you know, again, I'm encouraged to see the Redskins do a little better.
I'm waiting to see if RG3 plays. I'm not sure if he does, then that changes my mind, but I still don't completely trust the Redskins, so I'm going Minnesota there. They took care of the football last week, didn't turn it over. That made a huge difference to their chances. The St. Louis Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. Oh, boy, the Rams, I mean, they've been, you know, they knock off the defending Super Bowl champs, Seattle, and then they go and lay an egg. They lose 34-7 to the Chiefs, and they lost three offensive linemen in that game, Jeff. Gave up seven sacks. To me, there's no way anyone can go against San Francisco in this game.
No, and you know what? I watched Jeff Fisher's post-game press conference, and Jeff looks tired.
Yeah.
I think this season has been tough on him. You know, all the injuries that they've faced, the, you know, issues at quarterback, they give up a, you know, 1 or 2 yard touchdown on a kickoff return to Niall Davis last week, and it seems like every phase of the team seems to implode at different times. They played great special teams the week before in that big win against Seattle, and then come back and play really poorly on special teams the next week. There's just no consistency there with the Rams, so I'm going to go with San Francisco.
Okie doke. Our second game on Sky Sports on Sunday, it's not a bad one, Jeff. The Denver Broncos at the New England Patriots. The 16th time that Tom Brady and Peyton Manning go head-to-head, and I would argue that they've never been in finer form at the ages of 37 and 38, respectively, than they are right now as they go into this game. This is one of those games where in 5 years' time, we'll look back and we'll say, do you know what? I wish we'd appreciated the fact that we got Brady against Manning every year, because they're both sitting by the fireplace now telling their football stories. But they are in outstanding form, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and you know, this is one of those games that you really relish and cherish as an NFL fan, because you're not going to get this matchup with these guys playing at this high a level very many more times. So I think this is a real game to watch. I'm going to take Denver in this game.
Okay.
Because as I watch Denver, and I'm normally a guy that's going to pick the Patriots, but Denver's defense has impressed me. They're more athletic. They're playing hard. They've got some guys that can rush. I think they've made strides in the secondary. And then on offense, man, you talk about weapons. Mm. And they've got them all over the field. And obviously, Revis and Brown are going to be a factor in the game, but it's where do you put, who do you put against Sanders? Who do you put against Welker? Who do you put? I mean, they've got so many ways that they can get after you and deliver the football in so many different parts of the field, in the flat, deep, vertically, all the throws Manning can make. I really think that the Broncos are really playing high-level football right now.
And two guys who could be key for them are Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, because, Jeff, my first thought when I think of this game is we could almost see a game where two quarterbacks don't end up on the floor. I mean, do you know how quickly Manning and Brady get the football out? And it's clinical, and it's three steps, and the ball's gone. I mean, this could be a game that frustrates defensive linemen, but if Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware do have a big game and they do get that pressure on Brady, that would be a massive factor.
Yeah, and I think this game's going to come down to a couple things. Number one will be turnovers, and number two will be what team can run the ball enough to not be one-dimensional.
Yep.
Because both of these teams, if you go one-dimensional against either of these teams, you're going to struggle. And, you know, I think both teams can play from behind because they can throw the football. But who can manage the line of scrimmage and run the ball enough to not be one-dimensional will be the team that wins this game. And I think the Broncos have a chance to do that.
All right, you're going Peyton Manning and all of his weapons. I'm going Tom Brady, home field advantage, where the Patriots have been outstanding in the regular season. I'm going a fit and healthy again, Rob Gronkowski, and I'm going informed Brandon LaFell. So I'm going New England in that one, Jeff. Should be a cracker, though.
Okay. It'll be a great game.
It will be a good one. The Oakland Raiders at the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks got a win last week in Carolina. It wasn't... it wasn't convincing. I don't know whether half of these stories now, and this is a problem when you're a Super Bowl champion. People want to talk about, you know, disarray in the locker room and dysfunctional, and now Russell Wilson's not black enough. I mean, these are the sort of things that they're having to put up with because they have that big bullseye on their chest, isn't it, Jeff? Maybe this game is a chance for them to let it all be about a one-sided convincing win against the Raiders.
Well, this is a perfect time to have the Raiders come to town because you need one of those kinds of wins to kind of put all that talk aside. And there's nothing that cures a locker room faster or cures your ailments faster than winning. And, you know, all of that stuff, you know, is Marshawn Lynch going to ride the bus after the, you know, to the airport? I mean, all that stuff is just the media circus that floats around you when you are one of the better teams. You're a Super Bowl champion. It's always harder to win one after, you know, the year after than to get there, to stay there, because everybody wants to take a bow. Everybody thinks they're the reason that you got there. Everybody's getting hounded by the media. All of what you do becomes magnified a hundredfold. And so, you know, I can't see how a place could go from being, you know, everybody together. This is our, you know, great organization. Everybody loves, like I said, Mo Kelly, who does player development for them, is a close friend of mine, and he talks about how close this team is to now all of a sudden they're a fractured football team. I just think that's the media hype, and I think there's probably more, you know, smoke than there is fire when it comes to those things. And nothing cures all of that nonsense better than, you know, a convincing win, and that's, you know, what I think they'll have against the Raiders.
That's what I'm going with as well. Win for Seattle. So there you go. Jeff's got the inside scoop on the Seattle Seahawks there with his buddy Mo Kelly. Let's look at the Baltimore Ravens at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Jeff, I Pittsburgh were my dark horse at the start of the year, and they sort of won one, lost one. They finally got a couple of back-to-back wins. I think they win this one as well. I'm going Steelers.
Well, you know what? This team really is one of those teams that is frustrating. If you're a Steeler fan, it's got to be frustrating for you because, you know, like you say, 522 yards of passing in one game and 51 points or whatever they scored. And all of a sudden, you know, 3 weeks ago, we were talking about how they couldn't get things done offensively. They're up and down and all over the map. And still defensively, they show their age, they're not the Steelers of old. I'm going to take Baltimore because I think Harbaugh has a way of getting his team to bounce back and you know, I'm not sold on the Steelers yet, so I'm going to take Baltimore in this one.
Okie doke. Last game then, the Indianapolis Colts at the New York Giants. I think that this is a game where Indianapolis can get back on track. Andrew Luck is still going to put up the points. I don't see Eli Manning having the weapons to keep pace, so I'm going Colts to finish us off, Jeff.
Well, if the defensive players from the Colts are, you know, if they got them off suicide watch now, then you know, they got a chance. I'm going to tell you something. When you get scorched like they got scorched the other day, and you, when you look at the tapes of the game, I mean, they got guys running wide open. And, you know, obviously there were communication issues. There were all kinds of coverage breakdowns. I'm sure they're on that practice field in that meeting room, and you know, Coach Pagano is, you know, exercising his right as a head coach to oversee that and really trying to fix that defense, because they're good enough offensively, I think, the Colts are, to make a run, and but they've got to play better defense than they're playing right now, and I think they'll do that, and they'll come back and beat the Giants.
All right, so we've got a couple of different ones. You've gone Washington, I've gone Minnesota. You've gone Denver, I've gone New England, and you've gone Baltimore, and I've gone Pittsburgh. So a few differences this week. Jeff, I just wanted to just point something out before we move on to the mailbag. We're at week 8. It's not quite the halfway mark for all the teams, but it is for a lot of the teams around the NFL. And I know we say it every year, but this race is wide open. So just listen to this. The AFC East has 3 teams with a winning record. Every team in the AFC North has a winning record. The AFC South, there's only a game between Indianapolis and Houston. There are 3 teams in the AFC West with a winning record. There are 2 teams with 5 and 6 wins, so just one half a game between Philadelphia and Dallas at the moment. There's just 1 game between Detroit and Green Bay in the North. Both Carolina and New Orleans are top of the South with 3 wins. And there are 3 teams with winning records in the NFC West. I mean, it's a crowded picture as we, you know, as that bell rings and we enter the second lap.
Well, I think that everybody that's sitting in on Park Avenue in New York and in the NFL offices feels great about this. The fact that so many teams are still in it, so many teams are, you know, showing that they can, on any given Sunday, to use that cliche, that they can rise up and beat another team, and that keeps the fan interest at a height for the longest possible time. I think it's, the game is healthier than it's ever been, and I think the season is going to be one that'll go right down to the wire, and we'll see who plays well in December. That's going to be the critical thing. Who can get on a roll in December and get hot and be healthy heading into the playoffs?
Let's get to the mailbag then, Jeff. And there's lots of London-related questions this week, obviously coming off the back of that Falcons-Lions game. Let's start with this one from Mark, who says, there's a London franchise just around the corner. Imagine the noise for that winning field goal if we'd had a team for London. So, I mean, it would be probably a bit more intense, maybe, the atmosphere.
I think so, but, you know, because there's ownership then, there's true ownership, it's their team. But what the biggest development to me that came out of that game and another successful Wembley event was the fact that now you're starting to see the politicians,
yes,
coming out in favor of getting a team in London and recognizing what the economic impact for the UK and London itself would be to have an NFL team. And so when the politicians are starting to say, yeah, we want a team here, I think that's another really, really positive sign for the growth of the game in the UK and the possibility of a London franchise.
Yeah, Deloitte's came out with a report this week which spoke about the financial impact of a potential London franchise. George Osborne, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, obviously a very high-ranking politician in the UK, talked about how the government would help in any way they can, and whether that's in the form of tax breaks for players. And these are big things, Jeff, because, you know, one of the big issues would be the UK tax system if we had a franchise and players were here. So to know that there is government support is huge. And also, I think it's reflective of how this game has grown, because you and I know politicians like to attach themselves to popular causes, and that's what this is.
Absolutely, and once they sense which way the wind's blowing and where the constituents you know, are going to vote, or, you know, they're certainly going to pay attention to those issues. I think what's really going to be interesting, you talked about the taxing. See, I don't know if viewers or listeners understand that in the United States, each state has its own state tax. So, for example, California is very expensive. Massachusetts is very expensive. There is no state income tax in Texas. There is none in Nevada. So when you go to play a game on the road and you go to California to play, you pay California state tax on that day, on that week's paycheck. So, you know, think about that, what it would mean for a kid who's playing in Green Bay, for example, to go to London and play and then have to pay English taxes on his paycheck. So there are a lot of those kinds of things that are going to need to be worked out. But it's positive because I'm sure that the, you know, when you see, again, politicians as high ranking as Mr. Osborne has come out and be in favor of it, publicly support it, then you know that there's a groundswell of support there.
Here's two questions that are either side of the fence. Carl Moyes says, if there was a UK franchise, do you think, he's asking us directly, would you follow them or your current team? I mean, we work in the business, Jeff, so it's the same way as players. You know, if we were working around a London franchise, that's no different than, I don't know, I interviewed Red Bryant, the defensive lineman for the Jags, a few weeks back. He was a huge Dallas Cowboys fan growing up. But he said, well, I'm a Jags fan now. If I play for the Jags. But I actually do. I've said this a few times. I think that there were fans of other NFL teams in Jacksonville before the Jags got there. The people in Charlotte supported other NFL teams before the Panthers were in town. I met a couple of people at the weekend around various fan events. They said they listened to this podcast, they liked it, and it was helping them get into the sport, which was great. And I said, who do you support? Who's your team? And they said, one gentleman said, well, my team's the Saints until we get a London franchise. So I do think people would shift over. What do you think?
I think so, too, because there is then that ability to, you know, touch the team, if you will. You know, it becomes London's team, and it becomes the UK's team. And, you know, I think there's a sense of ownership and partnership that goes with that. And the NFL does a great job of that. And the really good NFL franchises, they talk about the partnership that they have with their fans.
Yeah.
And, you know, even here in Buffalo, you see just how deeply, deeply rooted the Bills are in this community. Now, that has grown over time, but certainly the same thing's true in Arizona, where there was no football until the Cardinals came to the desert. And, you know, that is the phenomenon that happens when a team, you know, the Titans leave Houston and go to Nashville, and then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's a passionate fan base in Nashville. So I'm sure the London franchise would have the same kind of attraction to the local fans.
There's a gentleman on Twitter, I don't know his name, but he goes by the handle of Some Bloke, and he says, am I the only UK fan who doesn't care about a London franchise? I'm 30 years a Raider, always will be, and you won't ask this question on the podcast as it goes against the NFL and Sky Sports agenda. Well, there you go, Some Bloke. We've asked your question, and I will answer it. And there are, Jeff, there are people who will. So the contrast of what we said, if there's people that are going to flip over, there will be people that don't. I mean, that's just the way it is in life. You know, what's good for some people like the early kickoff at Wembley Stadium, some people didn't like it. That's always going to be the case. My argument would be, yes, you might have a dyed-in-the-wall 30 years a Raider who doesn't change and doesn't want to know about a London franchise, but let's not forget the NFL are growing new fans every single year. And it's, you know, if there's a person that's been following the Raiders for 30 years who comes to two or three games, he is absolutely a priority to the NFL. But, you know, there are still going to be new people that come in. So that's where I think there still would be support for a franchise.
Oh, no question. And you know, big ups, big props to Some Bloke, because I've been a Raider fan for 30 years, too, and I know that's been tough lately. But, you know, and I'll always be a Raider fan, because I think there's an affinity, like you with the Dolphins. Mm. There's an affinity that you have to the team that you loved when you first fell in love with the game. Now, that doesn't mean that, that somebody's going to, you know, replace them in your heart, because I'll always think about Freddie Biletnikoff and Jim Otto and, you know, Lester and Hayes and, you know, all of those guys will always be my Raiders, right? And every time I see that silver and black, it reminds me of that. But I also understand that it's today is today, and I'm a fan of the game, number one. I'm a fan of the players, the coaches, the whole NFL experience. And, you know, I think that, like you say, we're growing fans every day, and there's plenty of room. There's 32 teams, 32 bandwagons you can jump on right now. So there's plenty for everybody.
Last question, Jeff, and this is quite a good one, actually. It's a little bit X's and O's, but a little bit sort of the mentality of a coach and of a team. It's from Tom Wilson. I think this is a good question. He says, why do we see so many teams take a shot downfield after a turnover? So your defense has just created a turnover, your offense trots out onto the field, and they quite often take a shot downfield. What's the thinking there, Jeff?
Well, I tell you what happens is the defense is, this is what's called sudden change football.
Yep.
Right? And, you know, when you talk about sudden change, all of this, here's really what happens. The defense is on the sideline. They're trying to make adjustments. They're getting water. They're getting, you know, treated. The tape adjusted on their ankles, whatever it is going on the sideline. Then all of a sudden, bang, turnover happens, and they've got to just drop what they're doing, run on the field. And typically there's a sense of kind of disorganization that can happen if you're not careful. And that's why you'll see teams come out, particularly with a play action fake or a little trick play at that time, because the concentration level of the defense, you know, they're not, you know, in the game. The tendency is to be, you know, lack a little focus in those spots. And that's why the great coaches that I've been around really practice that in practice, where all of a sudden they'll go from a drill, a whistle will blow, and it'll be sudden change, and the ball spotted, and, you know, they have to play. And the ability to gain your focus and gather your composure and understand where you are on the field and what the situation and all that in an instant is really critical. And again, you watch the great, like I say, you watch the great coaches coach, and they'll always have some situation in practice where there is a sudden change, and now the team has to adjust instantly.
Good stuff. That's called sudden change defense. Yes, Jeff?
Yes, it is.
All right, I'm going to use that. I've never heard that one before. We use that on Sky on the weekend, make myself sound really smart. What do you reckon? See how I pull it off? I'm not sure I will.
You'll pull it off. Hey, just don't sound too smart, because there may not be a place for me in 3 weeks. So
we're ready.
All right.
I've got a little advent calendar. You know, like the advent calendars, you open the doors and count down the days to Christmas. It's like one of those, but yeah. It's your face behind each door, counting down till you get in here.
I'm just telling you, I am so looking forward to getting over there and getting with you and Big Kev and all the guys in the control room and the fans. It's really a highlight of my year to come over and do that. I'm looking forward to it very much.
All right, we are counting down the days. This has been Inside the Huddle. Jeff, we'll be next week, so it's another Wembley week, the final one of three, which means I'll be in a parking lot somewhere lost and talking from the road, but it'll be a lot of fun again.
It sure will, and wish us luck. We've got two left to play, and we're in a playoff fight. If we win out, we're going to host a playoff game. So we've got Ottawa in Ottawa tomorrow, and all of Ticat Nation UK has got to get behind us, and you know, again, I'll be following you guys on the weekend.
There you go. Make sure you send your best wishes to Jeff and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Jeff, catch you next week, mate. Good stuff.
All right, thank you very much, Neil. Great to talk to you.
All right, this has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. Enjoy the games in the NFL Week 9. It's Brady against Manning. Doesn't get much better than that. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye for now.